This is Division 5 of the Colorado Court of Appeals. We have a special setting this morning for the case of Gandy against the Colorado Department of Corrections. I see the council are both in place. What we'd like to do, first of all, is to take up the appellee's notice of supplemental authorities. And we've read the notice of supplemental authorities. My question, counsel, is these are not new cases. The rule permits you to cite new cases that have arisen since your answer brief. And these are not new cases.
I believe you're speaking to the appellee.
No, I'm sorry. Thank you.
Yes, Your Honor. Of course, they're not new cases. Just in reviewing the record, it came to my attention that the European Convention was the convention that the U.S. government and Canada relied upon in processing Mr. Gandy's application. And with that said, I felt it important to bring the convention, the language of the convention, to the court's attention, especially given that Mr. Gandy's appeal is based on the language that he contends is conflicting in the U.S.-Canada treaty with the language in the administrative regulation.
So it's a new argument then. It's not just a supplemental authority based on your old argument. Now, this is a new argument. Was there any reference to this in your answer brief?
No, there was not, Your Honor.
You had 6 months. They filed their opening brief in October. And you had 6 months, and now on the eve of oral arguments, we're presented with a new argument. And they haven't had a chance to answer that argument. In the interest of having a complete hearing, we will accept your supplemental authority and your brief. You will not be permitted to argue this issue today. You will be permitted, counsel, to submit a supplemental brief in response. And can you have that to us by Friday?
Certainly, Your Honor.
Thank you. We will proceed. Let me make clear the ruling. We will accept the notice of supplemental authorities as an amended answer brief. We will deny the motion to strike the amended answer brief or supplemental answer brief, and we will give the appellate an opportunity to provide a reply brief on this issue only, and if you can do that by this coming Friday, you can file that with the court, and we will be considering it immediately.
Thank you.
All right, so with that, let's begin oral arguments with the appellant. Sorry, I was looking at the wrong side. You know, what happened was I was expecting Mr. Quinn to be arguing today for the Department of Corrections, and so you are obviously not Mr. Quinn. And you don't look like Mr. Quinn, but I thought maybe I was wrong.
May it please the court, I am Kyle Brenton, appearing on behalf of appellant Robert D. Gandy. The question presented in this appeal is a narrow one. Is Mr. Gandy eligible for transfer to Canada under the U.S.-Canada Treaty? Mr. Gandy does not ask this court to order his transfer. He merely asks that the court make clear that CDOT cannot declare him ineligible based on a requirement that is contrary to the eligibility criteria set out in the treaty. The crux of Mr. Gandy's arguments, as we've already been discussing, is the conflict between the eligibility criteria contained in the treaty and those contained in the regulation. The treaty states that no offender shall be transferred unless, among other criteria, he is under a sentence of imprisonment for life. The regulation, on the other hand, dictates that an offender may not be eligible if convicted with a life sentence. The two provisions are thus in direct conflict with one another.
What do the words may not mean in this context as opposed to is not eligible, for instance?
In the context of the regulation, the words may not pretty clearly mean shall not. There are, if you look at the 9 listed criteria in section 4C of the regulation, several of them use the may not formulation. For example, criteria 3, an offender with a committed fine or unsatisfied restitution order may not be considered for transfer without documented permission of the court. So I think that it is a reasonable assumption based on that to assume that may not be eligible in fact means shall not be eligible. And that indeed has been the position of CDOC in this case, that Mr. Gandy is not eligible based on his life sentence. It's not merely a matter of his eligibility is somehow called into question.
And what in the record supports that position?
In the record, the letters between CDOC and Mr. Gandy, in particular, the letter of, pardon me, Your Honor, of June 28th, 2007, which is on page 87 of the record. And in that letter, CDOC says to Mr. Gandy that the treaty is recognized by the state of Colorado at CRS 2460-2301. But on the other hand, the quote, the CDOC says, you do currently have a life sentence, and this is the rationale for your denial of eligibility to participate. So I think that letter pretty conclusively establishes that for CDOC anyway, may not, in fact, does mean shall not. And so CDOC has asserted in their brief that the treaty and the regulation do not conflict with one another. But that misconstrues what is actually at issue in this case. The question in this appeal is eligibility, whether Mr. Gandy is eligible for transfer, not whether he should be transferred. And on eligibility, the two provisions are mirror images of one another. Is Mr. Gandy eligible for transfer? The treaty says yes, the regulation says no. There's simply no way to follow both of those rules with respect to Mr. Gandy, and therefore they directly conflict. And of course, under the Supremacy Clause, that conflict can only be resolved in one direction. Colorado cannot adopt a regulation that is contrary to a term of the treaty. But of course, the treaty does not of its own force compel Colorado to participate in prisoner transfer programs. And that is, the treaty is between the United States and Canada, and individual states or provinces have the option whether to participate or not. And that's where the Colorado statute that I've just been discussing comes into it. Now, the relationship between the statute, the regulation, and the treaty may seem complex, but it in fact boils down to a fairly simple proposition. In the statute, the General Assembly delegated to the executive the authority to participate in any and all prisoner transfer treaty programs. But that delegation of authority was not absolute. The General Assembly didn't say to CDOC, you may participate as you see fit. The delegation of authority was conditional. It was, in the words of the statute, CDOC can participate subject to the terms of the treaty. And as we argued in our reply brief, subject to means conditional upon or under the control of. So by the ordinary meaning of that statutory language, CDOC's power to participate in the program at all has the terms of the treaty baked into it from the outset.
Now, is there a document in which the governor or the CDOT has accepted or stated that it will participate in the treaty?
There's not a document in the record from the governor, but if you look again at CDOC's regulation, at section 4B in this case, It begins by saying, the CDOT is delegated the authority by the governor of Colorado to approve the transfer of eligible foreign national offenders pursuant to the conditions of current treaties which provide for such transfer. So, Mr. Canby, so that provision, and in fact, the very policy statement of this regulation states that it is the policy of Colorado and the Department of Corrections to return foreign nationals to their country of origin, consistent with their best interests and the best interests of Colorado. So while there is not a specific executive order, for example, implementing this statute, I think that all the evidence in the record indicates that CDOT does in fact have this authority from the governor via the governor from the General Assembly.
Thank you. So just on the record, it's clear that the U.S.-Canada treaty is part of the record,
yes,
along with the European. Is that in on the record also?
No, Your Honor. The U.S.-Canada treaty is contained in the record, and I apologize, I do not have a page citation to that right at the moment. I can certainly provide it. The Council of Europe convention that CDOT refers to in its supplemental authority is not contained within the record. There is, just to add a little bit to the confusion, there is a third treaty, the Inter-American Convention, that is the treaty that Mr. Gandy originally referred to in his complaint in this action, and we discussed that in our opening brief around page 10. And that treaty is contained within the record, but the Council of Europe convention is not. So, returning to the statute for a moment, the statute does not add any substantive requirements that are not already present in the treaty, but the statute does constrain CDOT's rulemaking authority. As I've just argued, CDOT's authority to participate at all contains within it the terms of the treaty, and so by promulgating a rule that exceeds the terms of the treaty, CDOT has exceeded its statutory authorization, and under the Colorado APA, that is not permitted.
That's all I understand your argument. Let me ask you this, on the flip side, on the Canadian side of the treaty, is there anything in the record at this point, or is it premature? Do we know whether the receiving country would take responsibility for the cost of incarceration and would agree not to challenge, set aside, or otherwise modify the terms of the offender sentence?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
We've reached that point?
That is not a determination that will be made with respect to Mr. Gandy. That is a determination that is already in the treaty. The treaty, by its terms, requires that the receiving state, Canada in this case, is entitled to no reimbursement by the United States or by Colorado for the continued cost of Mr. Gandy's incarceration. And moreover, Canada, by the terms of the treaty, will have no jurisdiction to entertain any challenge to Mr. Gandy's conviction or to his sentence. The receiving state has relinquished any jurisdiction it may have to shorten the term of the sentence.
But that's not an issue in the case. It's just whether the regulation is trumped by the Supremacy Clause.
That is absolutely correct, Your Honor. Now, CDOT, the overriding theme of CDOT's arguments in this case is that its discretion, its unfettered discretion to determine where prisoners serve their sentence should essentially moot all review in this case. But as I have just argued, CDOC's discretion derives entirely from the grant of authority from the General Assembly, and that grant of authority includes within it the terms of the treaty. Discretion in implementing a law cannot extend to adopting rules that are contrary to a portion of that law. And moreover, this regulation is not an exercise of discretion. It is, in fact, a prevention of the exercise of discretion. Discretion in this case would involve an individualized assessment of Mr. Gandy's circumstances and a determination of whether transfer is in his best interests and in the best interests of Colorado. But the regulation prevents that discretionary decision from ever being made. For all we know, there is an employee at CDOC who is chomping at the bit to evaluate Mr. Gandy's application and to determine whether he should be transferred to Canada, and for that matter, answer yes to that question. But by rendering him ineligible for any consideration whatsoever, based exclusively on his sentence, the regulation is preventing that exercise of discretion with regard to Mr. Gandy from ever occurring. CDOT's discretion simply cannot go so far as to contradict a term of the treaty and to preempt its own review of Mr. Gandy's circumstances in this case. In sum, this court should reverse the district court and order CDOT to review Mr. Gandy's transfer application without resorting to the regulation's ban on transfer of life sentence inmates to deny it. And I would like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Okay.
Thank you.
I have just over 3 minutes.
Thank you.
Ms. Starnella?
May it please the court. My name is Catherine Starnella, and I'm here on behalf of the defendants, appellees, the Colorado Department of Corrections, and its executive director, Tom Clements. My attorney registration number is 43619. The sole question in this case is whether the Department of Corrections properly relied on Mr. Gandy's life sentence in deciding to deny his application, his transfer application. And the answer to that question is yes. Under the U.S.-Canada Treaty, the Department of Corrections has complete discretion in determining how to go about reviewing these applications and the criteria that should be considered in deciding whether to grant or deny the application.
Let me ask you this.
Yes.
Your counterpart presents it like it's cut and dry, that there's a treaty between the United States and Canada that provides no offender shall be transferred unless he is under a sentence of imprisonment for life as one. And that the regulation at issue here says an offender may not be eligible if convicted with a life sentence, and that may not means shall not. Do you agree with that?
No, it is absolutely not cut and dried. In taking a look at the broader scope, the broader terms of the U.S.-Canada Treaty, first of all, the baseline in Article 3, Section 7 is that no offenders shall be transferred. That provision then goes on to set forth certain exceptions to the rule. One of them is that an offender may be eligible for transfer if he or she has a sentence of imprisonment for life.
May or may not be.
May. But then we need to take a look at Article 3, Section 5, that makes it imperative that before a transfer can take place, the sentencing state or province here, Colorado, needs to approve of the transfer. Interestingly, although the U.S.-Canada Treaty contains that stark language, nowhere is there any language providing any guidance to the states in terms of how to review these transfer applications. And therefore, the discretion is entirely up to the state of Colorado to come up with how it wants to go about reviewing these applications and on what grounds it's going to choose to grant or deny them. Moreover, nowhere is there any prohibition in the U.S.-Canada Treaty, no language that prohibits a state from denying a transfer application based on a life sentence.
So let me pick up on that point that you just said. So the Colorado Department of Corrections can say, because of your life sentence and only because of your life sentence, we're denying your request for transfer?
Absolutely. There's nothing in the U.S.-Canada Treaty that prevents the Department of Corrections from doing that. Now, while Mr. Brenton argues that, well, he acknowledges that the treaty does not compel Colorado to participate in the program, and his argument hinges on Colorado's implementing statute. He argued just a moment ago that Colorado's implementing statute, he focused on the word subject to the terms of the treaty. And it's on that phrase that Mr. Brenton asserts Colorado has an obligation to participate in the treaty program. However, most recently in February 2011, the Connecticut Superior Court that case is Taylor versus Murphy, considered
this from your supplemental authority?
Yes.
Yeah, we will not hear argument using that authority.
Yes, Your Honor. I will note that numerous courts that have taken a look at the issue of whether the U.S.-Canada Treaty, or have taken a look at claims brought by inmates under the U.S.-Canada Treaty, have determined that because of the lack of particularized standards in the treaty, that the discretion is entirely up to the state, and therefore the court is not going to get involved in reviewing the decision.
It's obvious that the issue here then is, did DOC exercise discretion? Or has it simply implemented a rule that says no one, under no circumstances, who is serving a life sentence will be transferred to under the treaty?
Yes, it is entirely within the Department of Corrections' discretion to do so. And getting back to the phrase subject to the terms of the treaty, I remind the court that there is no prohibition in the U.S.-Canada Treaty against the Department of Corrections from imposing such bars to transfers. And therefore, the Administrative Regulation 550-05 is entirely in harmony with the U.S.-Canada Treaty because nothing prevents the Department of Corrections from doing what it has done.
With regard to the exercise of discretion, the regulation does appear to say that the Department of Corrections is intending to apply, it is its policy to do transfers. Is that so?
There's nothing in the administrative regulation that says that Colorado Department of Corrections absolutely will participate in the treaty program. Also, in the implementing statute, it uses the word may. That the Department of Corrections, actually, that the governor may delegate his authority to the Department of Corrections executive director to consent or deny the transfer applications.
But the basis for the denials to Mr. Gandy never said the Department of Corrections has elected not to participate in this treaty. That was not the reason given to him, correct?
That is correct. The reason was based on his life sentence.
And so there's no argument here from DOC that it was not participating or it had elected to not participate.
That is correct.
So now we have DOC participating, obviously, because this regulation talks about treaties and the circumstances for transfer under treaties. And here, as I understand it, the DOC did not do a particularized consideration of Mr. Gandy except with regard to his life sentence.
The DOC reviewed his application and exercised its complete unfettered discretion to decide to deny his application based on his life sentence.
Well, let me stop you there. Do you agree that the regulation provides no discretion to DOC authorities? In other words, we have a document here, 550-05, and if an authority under DOC is reviewing the application, is that authority required to deny based on the reg?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that question again?
All right, so we have a reg,
mm-hmm.
And the reg says, may not, I don't have the precise words here, but under sub 7, it says may not be eligible for transfer if serving a life sentence. Now, we have a DOC authority who receives that application. Does that authority have any discretion to grant the transfer?
The authority has complete discretion to grant or deny the transfer.
How is that when you have a regulation that tells that person may not be eligible?
May not be eligible is not, it's not a complete bar, but the Department of Corrections can exercise its discretion to determine. I mean, here we have.
Let me stop you, so because this is really a pivotal point for me. The first question is, may not be eligible for transfer. Does that mean, what does that mean?
It means that the Department of Corrections can choose to deny transfer application based on a life sentence, or can choose to grant it despite the life sentence. Here there are some...
Okay, so in that case, then, you're saying that it is not mandatory. It is telling the authority who has the decision to make, it's your call, you have the discretion, but you can... You can make the call either way.
Yes.
And so you disagree with Mr. Gandy that the provision is a mandatory provision that denies that discretion to the CDOT authority.
That is correct.
And yet, in the letters that are expressed here, the one that I have in front of me is Mr. Souther's letter that says the regulation establishes eligibility, capital letters, eligibility requirements, and that Mr. Gandy is not eligible. Can a CDOT authority grant a transfer to someone who is not eligible for transfer?
Under the U.S.-Canada Treaty, if there was a provision that precluded transfer, the Department of Corrections would not be able to override that preclusion.
You have a regulation that says that a person serving a life sentence is not eligible for transfer. It says may not be eligible for transfer. And you're also saying, however, that the authority, the CDOT authority, can transfer that person, can transfer a person who is not eligible.
Whether the language may not in the administrative regulation is an absolute bar to transfers or allows the Department of Corrections to exercise its discretion, the end result in this case is not in violation or in conflict with the U.S.-Canada Treaty. This is very much unlike the situation of conflict preemption presented in Ellman versus Colorado State Board of Accountancy, Colorado Court of Appeals decision from 1992. There, the Board of Accountancy had passed regulations concerning the licensing of accountants that were in direct conflict with regulations passed by the General Assembly, and it was impossible to comply with both. Here, in the instant case, to the extent that the Department of Corrections solely or partially relied on Mr. Gandy's life sentence in denying his transfer application, that decision is not in any way in conflict with the U.S.-Canada Treaty because nothing precludes the Department of Corrections from basing its decision on that.
Well, now you say nothing precludes that. But the treaty does say that these people may be transferred, and the United States government agreed that these people may be transferred, and the Colorado Department of Correction says these people may not be transferred. Can the people of Colorado, can DOC, in light of the Supremacy Clause, say something that the U.S. government's agreed to the contrary?
The U.S. government never agreed to how these applications need to be reviewed.
So now we have a procedural issue, is that the question? You say how they are to be reviewed. Is this a question of procedure?
The U.S.-Canada Treaty is entirely silent on the procedure for how these should be reviewed, and therefore the states have complete discretion to come up with that procedure, and that's what happened here.
Okay, so do we have here a procedure in which the application is denied based on a provision in conflict with the United States agreement and a treaty? It seems to me the only procedure you have here is read the regulation and deny. That sounds like the procedure.
The procedure, there's nothing in the U.S.-Canada Treaty that dictates how these states need to review these applications. And so the states go about creating their own procedures, and that's what happened here. Looking at the case law, there's no case law that says the government was wrong in terms of how it processed a transfer application. The courts say we've got no standards in this U.S.-Canada treaty by which to measure or assess or review the decision. Therefore, we're not going to get involved.
So is your argument that establishing a regulation that denies eligibility for people that are eligible under a treaty, that was the procedure? The procedure was the establishment of the regulation? Because my confusion here is that I don't think we are really talking about a procedure. It seems to me that what we're talking about, there's no procedure here. There's no discretion. You must deny because he's not eligible. In which case, then, that decision was not made with regard to Mr. Gandy. That decision was made with regard to all people serving life sentences. And so the procedure, if there is one, it was in the passing of the reg.
I will note, Your Honor, that the decision to deny Mr. Gandy's application based on his life sentence was not strictly a rubber stamp, oh, he's got a life sentence, we're going to deny this. As was expressed to Mr. Gandy in one of the letters sent to him from the Department of Corrections, Mr. Gandy committed a felony in Colorado, and accordingly, the law, he surrendered himself to the jurisdiction of the state, and their legitimate interest in the state for, he's victimized people of Colorado, and therefore Colorado has an interest ensuring that he completes the term of his sentence here.
Is that decision before the court on remand? Do we have a record that we can review that particular decision or that particular argument?
The issue on remand, I'm not exactly sure if I follow. The issue on remand when this court had this case back in 2008 was that there was nothing in the record that the Department of Corrections reviewed Mr. Gandy's application and nothing as to what was the basis for denying his application. That went back to the district court. We submitted various documents indicating how we've reviewed his application and the basis for the denial, and the district court was satisfied because there's no right to transfer and the Department of Corrections has complete discretion.
Beginning of the argument, I asked you if the denial happened solely because he was on a life sentence. And at that time, I thought you said that that was the case. Have you changed your position, or did I misunderstand you the first time?
Certainly articulated that his transfer application was denied because of his life sentence, but there are policy considerations underlying that decision because of the legitimate interest to keep Mr. Gandy here to fulfill the term of his sentence.
The question is, are you aware of any other prisoners who have, like Mr. Gandy, a life sentence who the department exercised indiscretion have been allowed to transfer to other countries?
I am not personally aware, but because the administrative regulation does not completely bar transfers for those who have life sentences, I would not be surprised if there are inmates who've been transferred.
But you're not aware.
I am not personally aware.
Thank you.
May I just wrap up with concluding remarks?
Let me ask another question. So it does not completely bar. So, I mean, because this is where I keep getting stuck. When it says that these people are not eligible, that is not a complete, when it says may not be eligible for transfer, that's not a complete bar to an authority within CDOC, to go ahead and make a transfer.
No, there's a big difference between the word may and shall, and the administrative regulation does not say that an offender shall not be eligible if he or she has a life sentence.
So how do we determine eligible then? So if your argument is that this is conditional, it may not be eligible, where do we turn to find out whether the person is eligible? Who determines eligibility?
It would be entirely within the reviewing agency's discretion.
So the CDOC authority then personally decides eligibility?
Yes, I do want to...
So it's a discretionary call whether somebody is eligible.
Yes, I mean, to the extent the court is concerned that this decision was arbitrary or capricious, this is not in the context of a 106A4 quasi-judicial or review of a quasi-judicial matter. This is under 106A2 and mandamus, whether there's a right to transfer and whether the Department of Corrections has a duty to transfer. In this case, there is no duty for myriad reasons.
That also concerns me because that's not what I heard coming from Mr. Gandy's counsel. Mr. Gandy's counsel, I think, explicitly says that he does not dispute that you have the discretion and that this is not about, he's not arguing that it's a mandatory. That's what I understand his argument to be, is that you did not exercise discretion, not that you are mandated to transfer him.
My understanding, correct, is that he agrees that the U.S.-Canada treaty provides no obligation to Colorado to participate in this. However, his argument appears to be that the Colorado's implementing statute requires the Department of Corrections to participate in this program, subject to the terms of the treaty, which he contends mandates transfer, or he contends does not, that transfer applications shall not be barred based on a life sentence, but there's no prohibitory language in the U.S.-Canada treaty.
So you can exercise discretion to not transfer Mr. Gandy on other bases, at very least. I mean, putting aside this life sentence, you have the discretion for some other basis.
Yes, Your Honor. I mean, this is entirely in line with the well-established case law that inmates do not have a right to say where they want to be housed to fulfill the terms of their sentence.
And thank you. I have no other questions.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You can wrap up.
All right. Thank you. So thus, in conclusion, I ask on behalf of the Colorado Department of Corrections and its executive director that this court uphold the district court's determination that the Department of Corrections properly reviewed Mr. Gandy's transfer application, and secondly, that no conflict exists between the U.S.-Canada treaty and the provisions of Administrative Regulation 550-05, because the U.S.-Canada treaty gives complete unfettered discretion to the Department of Corrections to review the transfer applications, and there's no language in the U.S.-Canada treaty that bars the Department of Corrections from denying an application based on a life sentence.
Thank you, Ms. Starnella.
Thank you.
Mr. Benton? Brenton, I'm sorry.
In light of the colloquy that has just occurred, I would like to once again draw the court's attention to the issue that Mr. Gandy contends is at issue in this case, which is eligibility. Mr. Gandy does not dispute that CDOC under the treaty has the ability to consent or not to his transfer. That is simply not at issue in this case. It says so in the treaty. But the question in this case is under what criteria will CDOC determine whether he is eligible? And can CDOC adopt an eligibility criteria that is directly contrary to an eligibility criteria in the treaty? Now, on the question of is the language may not, does may not essentially equal shall not, or does may not equal, depending on whether it's Tuesday and what we feel like, I would first begin by pointing out that CDOC's position, as just articulated, is that may not means whatever we want it to mean. This is not an argument that you'll find in CDOC's brief. It's in response to a question from the court, so it's certainly not improper. But to look at the record and to look at the letters from CDOC to Mr. Gandy, and to look at the way that Judge Carparelli, you quoted from a letter from Mr. Southers, CDOC is treating this requirement as mandatory. And the regulation, the heading of the section of the regulation is eligibility criteria for transfer consideration. The heading is not factors which might be considered when an inmate requests transfer. This list on any plain language reading is mandatory. And so I think that is ultimately a different question from the question of whether CDOC, after determining eligibility, then makes a discretionary determination about whether Mr. Gandy should be transferred. I think those are two different questions. And CDOC's promulgation of this regulation, as I've argued, prevents it from ever getting to the discretionary step. And I believe that is all I have to say, unless there are any other questions from the court.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The case of Gandy against Colorado Department of Corrections is accepted as submitted for decision. We will issue an opinion in due course. Counsel, thank you very much. You obviously prepared thoroughly. This is an unusual case. It's an unusual area of the law for us, and it's an important case. So thank you very much. Yes, you still have until Friday to respond to the motion for supplemental answer.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.